All right, so welcome back to the deep dive, listeners. When a deal falls apart, things can get kind of messy.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Like figuring out the fallout, who owes what, it can get pretty complicated, especially when you're talking contracts and someone backs out.
Exactly. And today we're going to dig into that whole world of contract damages.
And we've got a real humdinger of a case for you.
Oh, yeah, a real classic.
Acme Mills and Elevator v. Johnson. It's one of those cases that really makes you think about, like, what's fair when a contract goes sideways.
It definitely challenges our assumptions. We're talking about a case where breaking a contract actually seems to save the buyer money, but the seller, well, he made a pretty penny by breaking his promise.
So that's the question, right? What happens when the person breaking the contract actually comes out ahead? Is that allowed? And what does the law say about all of this? This case is really going to make you go, huh, that's interesting.
Yeah, we're talking about a fundamental question here. How do courts actually figure out the damages when a seller just doesn't deliver what they promised? It's a question that pops up all the time, especially in markets where prices are constantly changing.
In this case, Acme Mills, it's not just some random legal trivia. I mean, it's about something everyone can relate to. Buying and selling stuff, specifically wheat.
Ah, wheat the staff of life.
Exactly. And the seller, in this case, he ends up making more money by not holding up his end of the bargain, which feels kind of wrong, doesn't it?
It does on the surface. So let's set the stage.
Yeah.
It all starts back on April 26th, 1909. We've got this guy, Johnson, and he agrees to sell 2,000 bushels of wheat to Acme Mills for $1.03 per bushel.
Pretty standard contract so far.
Seems like it. But here's the catch. The delivery date is tied to when Johnson finishes threshing his wheat, not a specific date.
Ah, okay, that changes things a bit. See, the market price of wheat could swing wildly between April when they make the deal and whenever Johnson actually gets around to threshing later in the year.
No.
So it makes the timing of everything really, really important.
Right, you're bringing up a really key point. When we talk about the market price, are we talking about the price on the day of the contract or the price weeks later when the wheat's supposed to be delivered? That's going to make a big difference in how we calculate the damages.
Absolutely. It all boils down to what point in time we're using as our reference. And to add another layer to this whole thing, Acme actually gives Johnson 80 bucks worth of sacks for the delivery. You know they're all set and ready to receive this wheat.
Showing good faith.
Yeah, for sure. But then between July 13th and 15th, Johnson decides to do something a little sneaky. He sells that same 2,000 bushels of wheat to a different buyer. And get this, he gets $1.16 per bushel. That's 13 cents more than what he agreed to with Acme.
So Johnson's already made a nice profit by breaking his initial promise.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty clear breach of contract right there. He had an obligation to sell that wheat to Acme, but he went and sold it to someone else without their permission.
Right, so he basically prevented himself from fulfilling that first contract.
Okay.
Okay, so Johnson starts threshing his wheat after July 25th, and he wraps it up around July 29th. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. By this point, the market price of wheat has actually dropped to a dollar per bushel.
Wow, so it's even lower than the price Acme originally agreed to pay.
Yeah, by this point, Acme could actually buy the same amount of wheat on the open market for cheaper than what they promised Johnson. Talk about a twist.
It's like the market took pity on them and gave them a discount.
Exactly. Now, Johnson, he's already made his profit by selling to the other guy, so he just doesn't deliver anything to Acme. So naturally, Acme sues him for breach of contract.
Makes sense. They're out 80 bucks for the sacks, and they feel like they lost out on a good deal. They want $240 in damages. That's the difference between their contract price and what Johnson got from selling to the other buyer, plus the cost of those sacks.
They're saying, hey, Johnson, you broke your word and made a profit that should have been ours. But what does the law actually say about this?
Well, the law in this case focuses on a very specific concept, and it's all about figuring out the damages in these situations. And the legal standard basically says that the damages for a seller not delivering are calculated based on the difference between the contract price and the market price. But here's the key: it's the market price at the time and place of delivery.
Okay, so that timing is crucial. It's not about when Johnson made this deal or how much profit he made. It's about the market value of the wheat at the moment Acme was supposed to get it.
Precisely. The law sets a clear point in time to figure out if the buyer actually lost anything. It doesn't care about the seller's gains. It's all about what the buyer would have had to pay at the time they were supposed to receive the goods.
Okay, so let's apply this to the Acme Mills case. The wheat was supposed to be delivered after the threshing was done around July 29th. By that date, the market price had fallen to $1 per bushel. Acme's contract price was $1.03, meaning if they'd just gone to the market that day, they would have actually saved 3 cents per bushel.
That's a pretty interesting twist, isn't it? The market basically made up for Johnson's breach by dropping the price.
It's almost like they were rewarded for getting stiffed.
In a way, yeah. So based on this standard way of calculating damages, Acme didn't actually lose any money directly from not getting the wheat. The market had already compensated them in a way.
Acme tried to use a legal argument called estoppel to get around this.
Yeah, they were basically saying that Johnson shouldn't be allowed to benefit from the drop in market price because he created the situation by selling the wheat early to someone else. They felt like his actions messed with their ability to maybe buy wheat from somewhere else at a better price.
So for estoppel to work, what would Acme have to prove?
The key here is something called prejudicial reliance. Acme would have to show that they did something or didn't do something that hurt them because they were relying on Johnson to keep his promise. They needed to prove they were worse off directly because they believed Johnson would deliver the wheat.
But the court didn't buy that argument, right?
Right. The court said that Johnson selling the wheat early to someone else didn't actually harm Acme in a way that the law recognizes. Remember, Johnson wasn't required to deliver those exact bushels of wheat. He just had to deliver 2,000 bushels of the right kind of wheat by the time he finished threshing. And since the market price had fallen, Acme wasn't actually in a worse position just because that specific wheat went to someone else.
That's kind of like if you buy a concert ticket and the seller scalps it to someone else. As long as you can still get another ticket at the same price or even cheaper, it doesn't really matter that the original seller broke their promise to you. You're not really out anything.
That's a great analogy. The law sees things like wheat as interchangeable. One bushel is basically the same as another. So if the buyer can get the same amount of the same type of goods at the same price or less than another, they're not really considered damaged, even if the original seller made a profit by breaching the contract.
So it all comes back to this market price at the time of delivery rule. But honestly, it still feels a bit strange that Johnson can get away with breaking the contract and making a profit while Acme gets nothing besides their $80 back for the sacks.
I get that. It definitely challenges our sense of fairness. But there are good reasons why the law works this way. The biggest one is that it makes things predictable and stable in the market.
So everyone knows where they stand.
Exactly. By using the market price at a specific time as the benchmark texture, we have a clear system for calculating damages. It prevents arguments and lawsuits that could drag on forever because no one can agree on how much someone could have made.
It takes away the guesswork.
Right. And it keeps things fair for everyone. Plus, it helps to manage risk. Think about it in a contract like this. The seller takes on the risk that the price of the goods might go up before they have to deliver.
Because they're locked into the lower price they agreed to in the contract.
Right. On the flip side, the buyer takes on the risk that the price might go down, because they still have to pay the original price, even if they could get it cheaper elsewhere at the time of delivery. This market price at delivery rule acts like a balance to account for those risks.
It's like a built-in safety net for both sides.
Exactly. And that's especially important when you're dealing with things like wheat, where the prices can change quickly and unpredictably. Now, I know it might seem unfair that Johnson profited from breaking his promise, but here's the thing. Contract law is mostly about making up for losses, not about punishing people.
So it's about making the injured party whole, not about taking revenge.
Precisely. The goal is to put the non-breaching party back in the same financial position they would have been in if the contract had been followed. It's not about forcing the breacher to give up their profits. And this can lead to some results that might feel unfair on the surface, but it's all part of the logic of contract law.
And it ties into that concept we talked about before, efficient breach.
Exactly. Sometimes breaking a contract actually leads to a better outcome for everyone involved, even if one side takes a hit. In this case, the wheat went to someone who was willing to pay more, and Acme didn't actually lose any money because the market price dropped.
Yeah.
You could argue that this was a more efficient use of resources because the wheat went to where it was most valued at the time.
So the legal system is basically saying, hey, it's more important to have clear rules and a system that works smoothly than to try to achieve perfect fairness in every single case.
That's a good way to put it. The law aims for balance. It wants to be fair, but it also needs to be practical and predictable.
Okay, so let's bring it all together for our listeners. What's the big takeaway from our deep dive into Acme Mills v. Johnson?
The main point is this. When a seller breaks a contract to sell goods, The standard way to calculate damages is to look at the difference between the contract price and the market price at the time and place the goods were supposed to be delivered. This rule applies even if the seller made more money by selling the goods to someone else.
And here's the surprise twist in the Acme Mills case. The price of wheat actually dropped below the contract price by the time the delivery was supposed to happen. So Acme didn't lose any money because of the breach, even though Johnson made a profit by selling elsewhere.
It's a real head-scratcher, but that's how the law works. The court focuses on what the buyer's financial situation would have been at the time of the breach, not on how much the seller might have gained later on.
So for all the future lawyers out there, what's the golden rule to remember from this case when it comes to these kinds of contracts?
Write this down. Always base your damage calculation on the market price at the exact time and place stated in the contract. Don't get distracted by what happened before or how much the other party made. Stick to the market price at the moment the deal was supposed to go down.
And for anyone out there who writes contracts for a living, what's the practical lesson here?
Be super clear about your delivery dates. Saying upon completion of threshing or something like that might seem convenient at the time, but it can lead to confusion later on when you're trying to figure out the market price. Clear delivery dates make things much easier for everyone and prevent arguments down the road. Excellent advice. All right, as we wrap up this deep dive, I'll leave you with one final thought. Does this rule always lead to fair results? What if a seller intentionally delays delivery just to get a better offer somewhere else? Are there situations where sticking to the market price at the time of delivery might actually encourage people to break their promises? It's a complex issue, and this case really highlights the challenges of balancing fairness with the need for clear and predictable rules in the world of contracts. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.
My pleasure.
And we'll see you next time.
See you then.